I think that we all can just hop in our cars now and run down to Bridgeport. But then when I heard the story years ago, they took the grasshopper. And I've been, what was or is the grasshopper? And I did say to Lawrence Sherman, where did the grasshopper run? And what did you say to me, Mr. Sherman?
It crawled.
But the one that really took the grasshopper, I guess, to Bridgeport several times, is going to tell us a little bit about it. Mrs. Griffin.
When I came to Long Hill nearly 50 years ago, there were only two ways to get to Bridgeport. One was a train that went from down the foot of Whitney Avenue. The other was a grasshopper. Well, a grasshopper was a green trolley, and it was called a grasshopper because it was green, and perhaps because it hopped, too. Anyway, we had those two ways of getting there. There were some cars at that time, but nothing like the profusion of cars you have today. So we folks that were in high school went on the grasshopper. Dorothy Beach and I lived in the same house at that time, upstairs and down in the same house. We'd dash out at 7 o'clock in the morning and run up a block or so to the grasshopper. And if we were a little late, Mr. Ed Sherman, the conductor, was very nice, and he'd just wait for us so that we always got there. I never had the experience of being late for school because the grasshopper went off the track. But some of the girls did, and they were told in high school if that's the reason they were late, they were excused. But we did have a lot of fun on the grasshopper, and it was not a nice new car, but quite an old-timer, but it was, he got us there, and we would swing and sway all the way down to Bridgeport in the grasshopper. We had a lot of fun, and it was the only way of getting to Bridgeport except the train, so we just had to take it. And we always knew everybody on the grasshopper. In those days, Trumbull was not the size of this today, and we'd just get there and have a real family time all the way down. So I'm just sorry some of you didn't have the experience. It really was an experience.
Where did it go? Was Trumbull the last stop?
Yes, it went from Trumbull almost across from the St. Joseph's Manor entrance. The track began there, went clear into Bridgeport, and it went down, if I remember right, either Golden Hill or Fairfield Avenue, and then took the turn and came back. I forget how many times a day it ran, but I guess pretty frequently. But
how
it's
much did it cost to get on the
grass? I don't remember. Do you know?
15
cents, Lawrence.
Oh,
said.
Mr. Sherman,
now you live here, born and brought up, right? Yes. And the fire department means a lot to you. The Long Hill Fire Department, tell us that.
Well, about 1915, we started a fire company. We organized the fire company, and in about 2 or 3 years, it sort of petered out. And then about 1917, we started again, and the fire company was incorporated. Our first fire equipment, we bought about 4 dozen buckets and placed them around in different members' homes and in places of business where they were available to anybody to run and get them. And our means of notifying people of the fire was calling the central, and the central had a list of the fire company members, and she used to call each one at home, and that's how we heard about the fire. And we'd grab a bucket and run. Well, after a year or so, we ran a carnival, and we bought about 2 dozen soda and acid extinguishers. We placed those around in convenient places, and stores and homes and so forth. Then we grabbed the extinguishers and run. Then about 1922, we had, we floated a bond. Each member bought shares in a mortgage, and we built the Long Hill Firehouse. After we built the house, we bought a chemical apparatus. It had 2 tanks, each holding about 200 gallons of water. And they were charged with soda and acid, and we'd take our buckets and form a bucket brigade, and we'd fill one tank while the other one was being used back and forth, and that was our fire equipment. About that time, we had kind of a funny occurrence. We had the foam extinguishers had come out along in there somewhere, And we were at a grass fire one night. It was close to a barn, and the chief happened to look up and see that the spark had ignited the corner of the eaves. So he told someone to go get him a extinguisher. Well, somebody went and got a foam extinguisher. You have to see him to appreciate it. Leap the foam up there. The foam just went up the air and tripped out all over. It didn't go anywhere near the fire. But we had a lot of amusing experiences and
stuff.
Oh, well, I'll tell you about something. So we continued on with the chemical, and then finally we bought a pumper, which had a tank, or had two tanks on it, each holding about 250 gallons of water. So we could carry about 500 gallons of water. About that time, one of our reporters in town reported a fire, and it came out the next day. The fire was extinguished without much damage by the Long Hill Fire Department. So we continued on, and we kept getting better all the while. We had more training, and we were getting better. So one night, we had a fire, well, before that time, we had a little difficulty getting it formed. By the way, I was the second president of the company for 8 years. And we used to have difficulty getting a quorum. So one night, we had some important business we wanted to transact, so we didn't get the quorum. So we took the apparatus out and went down the lower end of town, and then we came up Main Street blowing the siren. By the time we got back to the firehouse, we had about 15, 20 cars behind us, so we got our quorum. So then we went on, and we had a fire down the lower end of town one night. So another fireman and myself put a ladder up on the front porch, up to the front porch roof, and we looked in the window, and through the smoke we could see the blaze. So we broke the window, and we were playing water on the blaze. It didn't seem to have any effect on it. First thing we knew, the chief says, "What are you doing?" He said, "The fire's in the other room." And we were playing the water on a mirror. So we kept progressing, and finally we have a fire company today that we should all be proud of. They do a wonderful job. Our fire loss is insignificant, and we've got a real nice organization. Well, of course, there was also a little difficulty back. Well, I don't know if I should get into that or not. in order to get water up at Long Hill, the Bridgeport Hydraulic Company wouldn't lay water up at Long Hill unless they could put hydrants on the line. We had no way of paying for hydrants, and so we formed a fire district in addition to the fire company. The fire company was incorporated, but we formed a taxing district. So we confined our district to the people who were going to receive benefits from, because we knew if we tried taking the whole town, there'd be more people who wouldn't receive benefits, so we'd never get the water up here. So we confined our district to the area where we were going to receive benefit from the water. Well, then we found out afterward that we couldn't expand our district without people coming in voluntarily. We couldn't force anyone in, so we were stuck with a small district that was expanded. We had no way of getting these people in. But within the last 10 years or so, the rest of the town have come in, and I think the whole town is in the organization now. So that's something else we had to get around.
Well, I think we really should all be proud of that. Now, how
are
you
feeling
about the taxing
sector? Yes, I'd like to tell you something about the Tashaway, the old Tashaway district, where the old Tashaway school is located, especially since the new Stonehouse School being bought, built on the corner of Dayton Road and Stonehouse is practically the same district. Now, the old Tashaway School was on the corner of of Madison Avenue and Fuller Road. Now, it's a dwelling now that the O'Donnells live in. It's been put into a dwelling house, like most of all the schoolhouses in town. Now, that district, I would say, took in from the Monroe Town line down all the way down Madison Avenue, a little bit below what is Trails End or Ketchell Road. It would also take in all of Cashaway Road to the Easton Town line and probably to the top of the hill above Route 25. It also taken Fuller Road to the Easton Town line, and incidentally there were some people who lived in Easton who went to the Cashaway School. It would go to Stonehouse, taking Stonehouse Road to approximately where the new school is, and to Fox Road and Dayton at the corner. It was called the Cashaway District. We always considered beyond there was the Long Hill District. That would be east of it. And also up Fox Road, there was a place called Pumpkin Hill. That's almost gone out of existence now, I believe, but there were quite a few children that lived up in Pumpkin Hill that used to go to the Cashaway School. Now, they could either come down Pumpkin Hill, or which would come into Fox Road and go over Stonehouse and then come down Madison Avenue, or there was sort of a little old alleyway they could get over to Madison Avenue, and they were practically to the Cashaway School. Also, this district took in Sealy Road to the Easton Town line, of course, and also there was a house in Easton where children went to the Cashaway School. Also, it took in Lake Avenue, although I don't know if anybody that lived on Lake Avenue went to school because there are no houses there for any students to attend. Now, this district here, I guess, is about as old as any district in town, probably as old as the Nichols District, we'll say. And somehow or other, the Cashaway District never did seem to grow until lately. Seems though the old places there stayed on and on until about after the war. It started to expand and housing development started to come along, you know. And, well, it's getting like most any part of town now. It's building up fast. There's one little incident that was quite humorous about when they had the new consolidated school in 1920, Long Hill and also Nichols. They were both built at the same time. I believe they used the Cashaway School a little bit later on. Some of the children, either they didn't have enough room in Long Hill. But anyway, the beginning of the new school term in 1921, Mr. Treadwell, who was their state representative at that time, wanted to reopen the Cashaway School for children in September. So he went around and got a petition out to have them attend the school, and everybody in town signed it. Then Frank Knight came along with a petition signed for them to sign it, for them to all to go to the consolidated school, and everybody signed that one too. And we've got the clipping about that, which happened before the school opened in September 1921.
Was it a
driving move? Yeah. So, I don't know if anybody got any questions they want to know about the Cashaway District.
Well, we'll give them a few minutes after if they'd like to ask a few questions. Did you ever play hooky from school?
Well, I know it's only once in your life. Tell everybody about it.
Which is this?
That and candid cameras right up there.
Right over there?
Real loud,
yes,
so they
yes.
can hear.
Okay.
About 6 inches?
Oh, that's too close, isn't it?
Well, one nice spring morning. I used to live on Edison Road and went to White Plains School. White Plains School was where, it's the same building that Mrs. Fairchild Serene lives in now on White Plains Road. I think it's around 800 or so, 8, That's a found the odd number. It's on the left-hand side going to Bridgeport, anyway. Just beyond the green salt box house on the other side of the street. I can't remember the name of the young fellow I met going to school. I couldn't have been more than 10 years old. Must have been around 1904, somewhere around there. But anyway, we decided it was too darn nice to go to school that morning. That's all there was to it. It's a nice spring morning. So, Kurtz's store at that time had a, Kurtz's store now, rather, the front porch that was on that store is all glassed in. So, we kids used to get on the end of that down at the where the garage is and run the whole length of Kurtz's porch and hop off the other end, which I proceeded to do. And when I hopped off the other end, a man was coming along, and I hopped right into his arms, and it was my father. So, I expected to get a good balling out or maybe a little more, and he said, "Home." I went home. So when he got home, I expected I'm going to get a good now. But he didn't. He said, "You're going to get old Jack. Put him on a stone boat. Go up in a lot and tell me what lot it was. It's where Dr. Loring lives now on Edison Road."
Put the stone boat.
Put the put stones on.
Oh, okay. I know what a stone boat is,
contrivance that a horse or a tractor pulls. Made out of about 4 8-inch planks, and it's about 8 or 10 feet long, and the end of it's cut on in the sawmill. They used to make those in the sawmills in town, cutting them on the sawmill so a horse can pull it on the ground.
Right.
And I loaded get the stones, he said, off this lot, take them down where they're building stone walls. Well. They were building a stone wall, and it was about halfway down where Jerome Avenue is now, so I took them down there. So I thought, well, come dinner time, Pop will send me to school at noon, sure. Nope. Out in the afternoon, pick up more stones, load them on the stone boat, and take them down. Well, when it comes time about 4:30 to get the cows, I thought, well, he'll call to me and tell me to get the cows, bring them in, you know. Still had to pick up stones. When we were about halfway through supper that night, he says to me, "Well, you willing to go to school in the morning?" I was willing to go to school at 11 o'clock. So, that was about the last time I played hooky.
I'll bet. Now, if I ring this bell, I think that's going to really bring a memory back to somebody. Today, I was looking at the Trumbull Times, or it was last Thursday, actually. And today, in school, on the hot lunch program, the children had meat ravioli with tomato sauce, grated cheese, a garden salad with spinach, apple crisp, Italian bread and butter, and milk. Now, if somebody here that kind of remembers when hot lunch wasn't a hot lunch like this, but she remembers when hot lunch began in Trumbull. And I love the story. Ms. Finley?
I wrote mine because I'm not very good at temperaments, and I hate just waiting and waiting and waiting, so here it is.
And she's a school teacher, so that's why she writes
it. Ms. Anna Allen and Ms. Odella Hopkins and myself taught in the White Plains School that Sammy spoke of from 1919 to 1925. And am I close enough?
Yes, it's fine. They want to hear you out here and this one.
Oh, I'll try to get a little. Trumbull schools at that time were under state supervision, and schools under this plan of education had to adhere to very strict rules and regulations from the Board of Education, from the State Board of Education. One of them was that the stoves, which were either in the front or in the middle of the classrooms, must be removed to the side rear and jacketed in heavy galvanized sheets held up by large steel posts at each side. The front was really a door that could be opened so that the teacher could tend to the fire. Second one was that all the windows must be removed to one side of the classroom and boarded over and placed, more windows placed on the opposite side. This was to do away with cross lighting, which was so injurious to one's eyes.
Did you have lights in that school?
No.
Did you have water in the school?
No.
Oh, boy.
In 1921, or 20, I don't know which, but one of those two, all the schools under state supervision were urged to carry out some sort of hot lunch program. This simply meant a hot drink of some sort, like cocoa or milk. And supposedly to supplement the sandwich lunch. In White Plains, the mothers helped the teachers to buy a huge brown enamel cooking kettle and a large-sized ladle, also chocolate, sugar, and milk to start the project. The money was realized from evening card parties held at the houses of the mothers or other interested parents at the center there. As there was no large assembly hall for such functions. Mrs. Alfred G. Guyon, Sr., headed the project, and she was aided in her efforts by virtually everyone in the community. Each morning, Miss Allen and I would stop at the McCloskey Farm, which is there at entrance 50 on the Merritt Parkway, for the milk. Her stove was the largest one, and she made the daily supply and served it at 2 cents a cup. Leftovers were free.
Oh.
It's the word. And all was served, paid or not. The mother's fund be taking care of the extras. Each child brought his own cup, took it home in the evening to wash, because our water supply was extremely precious and we dare not waste even the proverbial drop. The following year, a similar project was started in Nichols, and each fall, a PTA mother was selected for chairman of the soup committee. And she, in turn, made a schedule for the year, taking four mothers for each week. Each mother made 24 quarts of soup. And which is a lot of soup,
yeah.
And eighth grade boys would get the soup in 12 quart pails, take them to the school, and the teacher served it at lunchtime. Cocoa or canned tomato biscuits made one day a week, either the janitor or a teacher making it. A hole was cut through into the assembly hall from the kitchen so that the soup could be served there. Nichols was a little more fortunate than the rest because they had a real cook stove and city water, as well as a small kitchen with cabinets and sinks to help them along with their work.
How many rooms were in your school?
At that time in Nichols there were four, and in White Plains there were two, and later an annex which was out on the Nichols property. Anyway, thus began our hot lunch program.
Now, isn't that marvelous? We send our children off today with such a marvelous hot lunch. And then I love the part where the teachers had to go get the milk besides everything else.
Miss Allen insisted that she carry the milk because she was so much bigger than I. She said, people who look out of their windows and see a little thing like you carrying the milk, well, I don't do anything.
Now, you got a story about Nichols or
well, I can't tell any stories of any historical value, but I can tell a few that I've heard my father tell.
That's what we like to hear.
And this particular story, I do remember a few of the characters myself. It seems there's a neighbor lived a short distance above us, and he made himself rather unpopular because he had a habit of turning his cows loose at night and letting them graze up and down the highway. So that wasn't too bad. They all had bells on, the old-fashioned sheet-iron bells you hear for half a mile. Well, this particular night, Pops couldn't sleep anymore, so he gets up in the middle of the night, he's going to chase those cows back up where they came from. Well, he started up the road, he had met Tom Wade, old Civil War veteran, come down the road in his nightshirt. He was madder than a wet hen, too. And so Pop said, "We'll fix those cows, they won't bother us anymore." He says, "Drive them down my barn cellar." So they drove him down the barn cellar, and Pop says to Tom, says, "Hold me, I'll get a hammer." And Tom says, "You're not going to kill him, are you?" And Pop says, "No, I'm not going to kill him, but I'll fix him so they won't bother us anymore." He said, "You start taking the bells off." So Tom took the bells off, Pop took the old hammer and the flat rock, flattened them all out, put them back on the cow's neck again, drove them off. That is the end of that nuisance. You want another shot? So this sort of story is, don't want to cast any reflections on the present Board of Education. It's a lot different than it was in Pop's day. He tells a story about the Board of Education calling a meeting, and due to some oversight, one of the members was not notified. So the next day, someone asked him, says, "How come you didn't show up? We missed you." Well, he says, "I didn't know anything about it." He says, "If I'd have known, I'd have went."
Oh, that'll work. That's right.